And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 15th, 2021. Today, we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, all-around good person, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you, Ted?
Good, good, good. So, Mariah, last time we met, we were talking about the UN IPCC report that's caused such a stir, which has such a sobering impact and providing scientific information that's fairly worrisome, right? If you're at all involved, if you're at all care about the planet, you should be worried. What we did last week in order to sort of
jump in and say, not just care about the planet, but care about our place on the planet, right? Well, the planet will recover no matter what. It's our home that we're worried about.
If you're concerned about human civilization, you should be worried. The planet will do just fine in a couple of million years. So what we've been doing is reading something called the headline statements from the IPCC, the headlines of what they want you to know. We thought we'd do this because this is the actual words of those people, right? And what we hope to do is actually read the words and then try to turn them into English, because many of those words are somewhat technical jargon and somehow need to be unpacked. So let's get right to it. The last time we met, we talked about the headlines under the A heading, which is called the current state of the climate. There were four headlines. Then under the B headline, possible climate futures, there were five headlines, okay, about what might be coming in the near and long term. The third headline, headline C, is the one we want to talk about now. And this talks about climate information for risk and regional adaptation. Right? And so here's the headline. Let me cue up the headline. Here you go. Here's what it says.
Natural drivers and internal variability will modulate human-caused changes, especially at regional scales and in the near term, with little effect on centennial global warming. These modulations are important to consider in planning for the full range of possible changes.
Now, that's a mouthful. All right. I mean, there's a lot of words in there that are not very clear. So they start out talking about natural drivers and internal variability. To my mind, that means the things that have always driven the weather, and weather being the day-to-day change in the climate. That is going to, in some sense, modulate, they say, but they're going to hide some of the human-caused climate change in different regions and over the next few decades without really all those changes you see. Maybe it's going to get cold for a while where you live for a decade, right? But that doesn't affect what they call the centennial global warming, that is to say the global warming that happens over the course of a century. Right. So there's going to be variations in that are local and that don't look like climate change, but they will happen. They will be happening, and you need to take those into account. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so Neil deGrasse Tyson did this video where he was walking his dog and he talked about the comparison of weather to climate as a person walking a dog, right? So the dog is the weather, and you can't predict it. It's kind of all over the place, and it's up and it's down, and it's, you know, sniffing here and sniffing there, right? But the human has a path that they're going on, but you know, it takes a while to see that path because you're watching the dog zigzagging back and forth, but the human's path is sort of this straight line trajectory. And so I think that's what you have here, is the idea of, like, you know, climate is a 30-year pattern or, you know, century-long pattern, whereas weather goes back and forth. And so that's why, you know, you can have a snowball that you bring into the Senate floor or whatever and say, there's no climate change here. Well, no, there is. There's going to be variability, and sometimes you'll see some sort of things that don't feel like the planet is warming, but it is.
Right, right. And we will, I mean, that cuts both ways. So There you go. That's a headline. Let's move. Headline number C2. Let's hear what it says.
C2. With future global warming, every region is projected to increasingly experience concurrent and multiple changes in climatic impact drivers. Changes in several climatic impact drivers would be more widespread at 2 degrees Celsius compared to 1.5 Celsius global warming, and even more widespread and or pronounced for higher warming levels.
Again, Mariah, there's a lot there, but it what they talk about climatic impact drivers, I mean, these are like storms, I guess, right? Storms and droughts.
Yeah, right? And I think to me, part of the take-home point there is that, you know, every 0.1 degree matters, right? So the difference between 1.5 degrees and 2 degrees Celsius is a big deal, because there'll be even, you know, at 2 degrees Celsius, you're having an even more widespread effect on every region in the world. So we're all at risk.
I think that's an important point too. It's like every region. So people here in the United States think, oh, we're okay. It's only the people you see in National Geographic that have to worry about this stuff. And no, not anymore. Every region of the world will be hit, as you see now, the West Coast being heated up and burned, and, you know, the hurricanes in the Gulf and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's global. And they also talk about concurrent and multiple changes. So I think they mean that there are things that would happen at the same time, right? What if you have a hurricane and the drought out west? I mean, can the United States actually withstand those sorts of multiple things happening? Or you have the sea level rise and then poisons all your freshwater because the salt water seeps into your freshwater supplies. I mean, there are these
saltwater intrusion
multiplying things. All right. So everyone's at risk. Let's talk about item headline number 3. Here it is.
C3. Low likelihood outcomes such as ice sheet collapse, abrupt ocean circulation changes, some compound extreme events, and warming substantially larger than the assessed very likely range of future warming cannot be ruled out and are part of risk assessment.
That's a really intense one, and I think that's one of the ones that gives me pause a lot. So I think one example of this would be right now there's a bunch of ice over Greenland, right? And that's not expected to move. But if that ice on Greenland were to come loose and slosh into the ocean, all of a sudden, you know, if you picture you have a cup and it's full to the brim with water, and then you splash in a bunch of ice cubes, all that water is going to overflow. Whereas if you have a cup, you know, that already has ice cubes in it and they melt, it doesn't overflow. And so the sea ice that's melting is not good, but it won't be as catastrophic as if something like the sheet of ice on Greenland sloughs off.
Which is on land.
Which is on, right, exactly. It's on land. So, you know, it's the idea of the splashing ice cubes into the water. And of course, also it exposes a whole bunch more land, which, as we talked about in the prior episode, you lose this sort of helpful reflective impact of some of the ice.
I mean, if Greenland melted or parts of the Antarctic broke off and fell into the ocean, I think to talk about the sea level rise of 30 feet in a couple of decades.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, huge amounts of sea level rise. And what they're saying is that they're low likelihood, but they can't be ruled out. Right. I mean, yeah. What was the crazy movie about Day After Tomorrow, right? Where they basically said that, yes, the Gulf Stream collapses and all of a sudden the Arctic cold comes down over the United States. Well, low likelihood, it's a movie, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, these things, they cannot be ruled out anymore, and they are significant. So there you go. Those are the
deep breath after that one.
Yeah.
that's an intense finding.
So that's the headlines that come under the C heading. Let's go finally to the D heading, which is limiting future climate change. Okay, so there are two headlines. They're kind of long, so let me cue these up, have them read by a different voice.
D1. From a physical science perspective, limiting human-induced global warming to a specific level requires limiting cumulative CO2 emissions, reaching at least net zero CO2 emissions, along with strong reductions in other greenhouse gas emissions. Strong, rapid, and sustained reductions in CH4 emissions would also limit the warming effect resulting from declining aerosol pollution and would improve air quality.
All right, that's a long one. There's a couple things in here that they're saying. Of course, one is what we know is that if you want to reduce global warming to a specific number like 1.5 degrees, you have to limit the CO2 emissions, right? And they don't say it here, but that means you got to stop burning fossil fuels, right? And they talk about you have to reach at least net zero by mid-century, right? But net zero is this term we're all going to hear lots more about. Net zero means that even though there may still be some emissions from some of carbon dioxide from some sources, we will invent ways to take that stuff back out of the air so that the emissions are net zero, even though there may be some remaining emissions. That is a tall order. That is a challenge that we don't even know how to do yet. And the other interesting thing is that as we reduce, so this headline says sustained reductions in methane will limit the warming effect that's going to result from declining aerosol pollution. That is to say, if we shut down all the coal plants, the aerosols, what are the aerosols? They're little tiny particles that come from burning coal. They are, in fact, cooling the planet because they're reflecting the sun back up. If you shut down all the coal plants, all those aerosols fall out of the air in a few years, and now you have more global warming, this perverse thing where the coal plant was protecting you. And so, again, you have this need to reduce carbon dioxide emissions.
Yeah, right? Yeah, the other point with the methane too is that methane is a stronger greenhouse gas. We emit less of it than we do carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide makes up the bulk of the greenhouse gas emissions that we release, but methane is actually more potent of a greenhouse gas. And so, you know, really making sustained and intense efforts to bring those methane emissions down is a critical piece of all of this, I think, too. Right.
I mean, one of the critiques that we've seen of the whole report is that it doesn't talk about the fossil fuel industry very much. It keeps making these sort of, very polite references to carbon dioxide emissions without saying, by jingo, these carbon dioxide emissions come from you driving your car around and Exxon forcing you, politically to keep driving that car because they want to sell you gasoline. That's a whole other question, right? But I mean, what do you think?
Emily Atkins pointed that out in her newsletter, Heated, which is always an interesting perspective. The idea there that, I mean, I think in the summary report, fossil fuels are not mentioned. I think in the full 1,300-page report, fossil fuels are mentioned. But in the summary report, which, let's face it, anything, it's probably the summary report. There will be many people who will read the full 1,300 pages, but most people will probably read the summary report if they're reading about this. And it's surprising and disappointing that it doesn't mention fossil fuels in that report.
Right. Because, I mean, there's all kinds of hot takes floating around, but one of the ones I like is that this is not. This report and what's being done to the earth is not a tragedy. It is a crime because there are people who knew and have been resisting making the right changes for a long time. Yeah. Anyway, let's not go on. We can spend several shows complaining. Yeah, we can go down that path another time. I guess the next and the last bullet is one that I find interesting for a couple of reasons. Let's hear what it has to say.
D2, scenarios with low or very low greenhouse gas emissions lead within years to discernible effects on greenhouse gas and aerosol concentrations and air quality relative to high and very high GHG emissions scenarios. Under these contrasting scenarios, discernible differences in trends of global surface temperature would begin to emerge from natural variability within around 20 years and over longer time periods for many other climatic impact drivers.
So, Mari, let me take a crack at it, right? What I think this is saying is that there are two different paths we can take. And in this UN report, what they those pathways into the future are called scenarios. Right? There's a scenario where for the next 100 years, we get our act together and cut down carbon dioxide emissions. Then we have very low greenhouse gas emissions in a scenario that we do the right thing. There's another scenario where we don't do the right thing and we keep driving our cars around and have very high greenhouse gas emissions, right? These are just ways that the scientists can visualize what might happen in the future and to be do specific calculations by imagining scenarios in quotation marks as to what might happen in the future, right? So you have low greenhouse gas scenarios, high greenhouse gas scenarios. And of course, the low greenhouse gas, the low carbon dioxide scenario is the one we all want. But this thing says, this point says that the discernible differences between those choices, that is to say, if today we started to cut greenhouse gases dramatically, the discernible differences between the two scenarios would begin to emerge after around 20 years. That is to say, we aren't going to see any payoff from all of our efforts for 20 years. And that if we do everything right, we're still going to have 20 years of heat and bad weather.
Yeah, that's one of those things that's, again, it's, you know, kind of gives you pause, right? So, and I think that's part of the problem with climate change is our worldview with acting on climate change, taking climate action. Our worldview, our Umwelt, I think Umwelt is the German word for sort of, I've heard describe this, but the idea that, you know, our perspective on life is like sort of like 5 years. You know, like we can't see super far down the road, and yet the impacts that we have, both negative and positive, for climate take a long time to show up. As we were talking about before, you know, 30 years is when you start to see climate, you start to see patterns in climate and but patterns in weather that you can call climate. And so we can put all this effort in, and it will feel like we aren't doing anything, and we'll continue to feel like we aren't doing anything or fixing anything for 20 years. And so it's hard to stay motivated on something when you don't see the immediate effects, mm-hmm. right? You know, mm-hmm. so.
And politically, it's very easy to attack. Right? Yeah. You put up all the wind turbines and things get that worse and worse and worse. And all the nutcases will say, well, why'd you bother, right?
Right, especially when we have, you know, sort of 4-year terms, right? So it's hard to keep things going over 20 years when everything can easily be flip-flopped back and forth.
I mean, I guess I'm really hung up on the concept that if a baby were to be born right now, right, the choices that we make today will determine the world that young woman enters when she's 20. Right? Yeah. When she's in college, it's either going to be better or it's going to be really terrible for her. And the idea that we're making those choices now is sort of this apocalyptic moral responsibility that, you know, it's too easy to walk away from. Right?
The young people get it, right? I mean, it's definitely, you see more and more, you see that the youth of America is... they get it, right? Maybe because of Greta Thunberg, who knows what the biggest influence there is, but they understand that, you know, this is going to land on their shoulders. And so they're sort of like, we need to start holding everybody accountable for this.
Mm. I don't know. I mean, yes.
might be rosy glassed of me to say, but I do think that a lot of the youth is pretty active and motivated.
Well, so dear listener, this is all very somewhat depressing stuff. It's important to know that there still is a window to act, that every tenth of a degree matters, that we are here to protect the future, right? And that's our job. And the idea that it is an utter, from my perspective, kind of a moral failing to give up and not do anything, even in the face of this sort of bleak outlook, because it's only going to get more bleak if we don't do anything. And it's our responsibility to act. Oi.
I agree.
I'm going to go think of some fun stuff for another show. We're going to talk about how next time maybe we'll talk about solutions. All the good stuff in the reconciliation bill that is now before Congress and how those things will set us in a good direction. But in the meantime, we'll put up a link to these headlines at the blog at MCAN. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. That's where the hot links are if you want to go take a look at this stuff. Please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we ought to be talking about. You can listen to us on your smartphone using any of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask all your friends to listen to us on their favorite modern podcast distribution app. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support, even through all these ups and downs. D.R. has been with us. I want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects disadvantaged communities in order to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to everyone for listening. I think the show's been sobering, but ought also to be transform your shock into white hot rage, the rage of a thousand suns. And let's go. Let's go deal with this problem. Bye, Mariah. Bye, everybody.
Take care.
Very cool.